This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
Kaftes Nitmel Shilshuim Harei Sholish Negichis. It says in the Pasuk, if he is a bad tempered ox, an Akron, Nitmel Shilshuim from yesterday and the day before, implying that there are three Negichis, that this is the third time he's done it. So he's called a Muad once he has already bought twice. The third one, the owner becomes responsible. B'huad b'vola, what does b'huad mean? Loshun hasrol v'aidim. B'huad comes from the word aid, that in the presence of witnesses he has been warned. K'mol ha'id ha'id v'nayoish, v'nayoish. That is nakon, not necessarily nakon. Since it says Kiyigat, I might thought that only if he killed him by means of Negichel, by means of going, what happens if he bit? If he bit somebody and caused him death. The Chifo, he pushed him, he kicked him in iron, it doesn't matter how he did it, he caused the death of the person, the skiller takes place. The Gan Baal of Yumos, Bidei Shamayim. Rashi learns Yumos as meaning is held responsible for the death of the other person, and he's held responsible for the Shemayim. It's a capital offense in the Shemayim. Beis Din doesn't give him any kind of death sentence, but he has been responsible for a murder. Since it was a human act which resulted in the death of the other person, what is the human act? Omitting to guard the ox. He's responsible for that death. Yochel bide Odom, I might think that he should die by means of Beis Din. Talmud Loma Mois. In the din of Ratzach, it says that if a person murders, then the one who smote will be killed. Ratzachu, he is a murderer. Implying, let us say Chazal, that one is murdered only when one is a murderer oneself, not for the murder of one's ox, not for when one's ox was the murderer. Even though one is responsible, that doesn't make the man a murderer. A man has been responsible for the murder of another human being. How was he responsible? By not guarding his ox, not by acting, by murdering. And there's a capital offense, a Beis Din issues a death sentence, only if the man himself is the Rotzeach, is the murderer. That's the show. Then in Lamed Gimel we've got another kind of damage. The Chiyiftach Ishboyer. If a person opens a pit or digs a pit and doesn't cover it up, so here this is not possessions of oneself. In it. There's nothing that I own here. What do I own? You'll see that we're talking here about Rishus Haradim. A person goes into the street and doesn't belong to him, and he digs a pit. It's not my pit. He can say, so to say, it's not my ox. So we see that he can't say, not your ox, you're responsible. All he can claim is, I didn't know that my ox does this kind of thing. So I have he walks around and he's very domesticated and he's never gored anybody before, and that's all that I've taken no special measures. That's a type. Once we find that the shor is an akhon, then we say that's not good enough. You know that your ox is a bad tempered ox and he needs to be kept well, and that's what you're being held responsible for. He's yours and you didn't look after him. Now we come across, even if a man digs the pit, it's not his. So what is this? What are we looking at here? Are we looking at a case of a kind of groma where I cause damage? So I think that somebody falls in. What's happened? How should we analyze this? Is this I who damaged the other person? In which case I've damaged him indirectly. I just dug a pit. There was nobody there when I dug the pit. He fell in. Is it a kind of a groma of an indirect damage? Or do we say, no, we've got to take it along the similar lines as the ox. My ox, it's not that I caused indirectly the death of the person, I caused it. It was my ox who caused it directly. So do we say it's my bow that was the direct cause of the damage, or am I an indirect cause of the damage? Says the Torah, you're held responsible. But not Baal Shom or Shoyer or Chamor, and an ox or a donkey fell into it. Baal Habor Yishalim Kesef, the owner of the pit, we see already that the Torah calls him the Baal Habor. It's your pit like it's your ox. By digging it, you made it yours. Or by opening it, you created it. It's yours, and therefore the owner of the pit has to pay in money. Yoshim Lidolo, the Hamesi Eloi, he pays for the animal in full, and he can take the profits. So we've had the damage of a shoal, and we've had the damage of a boy. Look at Rashi in Pasuk Lamed Dalet, Baal HaBoy. Says Rashi, that doesn't mean literally Baal HaBoy, the owner of the boy, because he isn't the owner of the boy, but it's Baal HaTakola. You are the owner there's something there which causes, even if it's not a boy, whatever it is, you are the master, you're the creator of a takola, something which is going to make people, which is going to cause people damage. Even though the pit isn't legally his, shasol b'rishus harabim, he dug the pit in rishus harabim. Asol hakosu b'olov nishayev olov b'nizko. In as far as his obligations are concerned for the consequences of that pit, the Torah makes him the owner. The Torah gives it over to his bailiffs. Let's go further into the. We're not talking about whether you should or shouldn't do it. We're talking about what your obligations are having done. Depends what exactly you did with it. If it's what exactly you direct, or it's grammar, or what you did. This, or even if it's grammar, that you're not chayev. Vechi yigov shoyr ish es shoyre eyu omez. In Pasuk Lamed Hey. Back to shor. Another kind of shor problems. A shor shats, pushes. Another shor, here we're not talking about a human being, but shor damages shor. Omez, and that ox dies. Vumokru es hashor hachai vechotsu es kasper. Now an interesting halachic. They sell the living ox and divide its money. The gamis hamesi echetzun, and the dead ox they also divide. What does that land up being then? What is the payment? So a shoal is worth R1,000. Goes another shoal worth R800. The carcass is worth R100. So now what have we got? The total assets available now are how much? R1,100. What do we do? We split it. So the owner of the going ox keeps 550, and the other person gets 550. So what has happened in effect? He's paid half. Well, in this case, not he's paid, then more than half, isn't that so? So let's see in Rashi exactly how the Ezekiel works. Says Rashi in Pasuk Lamed Hey, "V'chi yigov yitchoy ben bekornov ben begufoy ben beraglov." He pushes, either using his horns, using his body, using his feet. It doesn't matter what part of the body of the ox is used. It's the action which is important. Ben shenoshu b'shilov, or he bit him. Chulon bichlal negifoy. This is all the gifah. She'in negifoy elo loshun makim. Because what the gifah means is he smote. He attacked the other shor. He hit the other shor. It doesn't matter what part of his body he used. Shorish min shor shelish. Mochru is hashor. Veshovim hakosu medavet. Rashi starts off saying, if you want to understand this pasuk, you've got to assume that we're talking about two oxen worth an equal amount. Shor shovim osayim. Shehim is shor shovim osayim. An ox worth 200 that killed an ox worth 200. Ben shah nevelo shovim harbe, ben shi shovim ba'at. Whatever the nevelo is worth is irrelevant. If each one takes half of the living and the dead one, then it comes out that each person has lost a half. Because the death has resulted in a loss of 200. Debt has resulted in a loss of 200, and by sharing the difference, by sharing the amounts, half of that is made up. Lomad, let's go. Shatam mishalem hatzi nezik. This teaches us a general principle that a shor tam, which is the shor we're talking about, tam means just ordinary shor. There's nothing particular about him. He's a tam. He's not a muad, which means he hasn't got a reputation for going. First time it's happened, or the second time it's happened. Shemin Ashovin Atolome L'Shein Ashovin. Because from a case where they're equal, you learn to where they're not equal. One can learn that the din for a tam is to pay for half the nezek, not more, not less. Or yochol af b'she'en ha'shovim b'demeim k'she'en chayim, omer akosu d'chotsu ishneim. I may be, what it means is, even if they're not equal in their living value, the two living oxen were not equal to start with, nevertheless, maybe we should take it literally, as we tried to do when we first translated the pasuk, but irrespective of their values, you have to divide it down the middle. Then it can come out that the mazik lands up doing very well out of the deal. For example, you could then have a situation where the mazik has a miserable ox. It's only 100 grand. And the nizak has a magnificent ox. An ox that when it's dead, it's worth 1,000 grand. Never mind what it's worth when it's alive. So what happens now? So you've got to sell them both and share the money. So the mazik comes out getting 550 rand, and he only had an ox of 100 rand to start with. So that would be a ridiculous situation. And it is impossible to assume that the Torah would say that the mazik is niska, even though if you read the pasuk simply, that's what it would imply. That cannot be the pshat at all. That would be totally irrational. Or it could happen also that the nizak lands up. You can find that half of the living ox is worth more than the total value of the dead ox when he was alive. In which case he will land up with more than he lost. Also not logical. Why is it not logical? Maybe let's say it would compensate him for the inconvenience. But then it would come out that a tam gets more than a muad. Because when a muad, as we'll see in the next posuk, when a muad goes, what is he paid? That's the highest that has to be paid. Nezek sholim. That's the most that the Torah requires to be paid under these kind of circumstances. That is the total amount that the nizak has lost through the act of damage. And if we're going to take this first posuk literally, we can well come out that in the case of tam, where the mazik was less responsible than in the case of Muad, he has to pay far more than in the case of Muad. It doesn't make any sense. Therefore, the only way to learn pshat in these psukim is to say the Torah is talking where both oxen were of equal value to start with. And it teaches you that the tam pays half. That's how much he pays. And you project that to a situation where they're not equal as well. Always the amount that the tam is going to pay is going to be half. We say here the nevela is worth, the ox was worth 1,000. The nevela is worth, the carcass is worth 100. So you've lost 900. You get compensated, you take your nevela, you get compensated for 450. That at the end of the day is what he gets. Now comes the kasha. Good. So we've worked out there is no other way to understand the pasuk. But why write it in such an obscure way? Why write the pasuk in a way where its literal translation is an impossibility? The lamed comes to teach us another thing. That there is a limit to the amount that the tam has to pay, and that is his own value. If, for example, the going ox dies, the most that the nizak can take, I assume that there's no problem with the terminology of mazik and nizak, because if there are, we're going to have a lot of difficulty in Balakam. The mazik is the one who caused the damage, the nizak is the one who was damaged. If the ox who goes dies after going, the most that the nizak can have is that ox. It is paid for out of the value of the going ox. That's a further limitation imposed by this pasuk. So there's a limitation in terms of the proportions. It's 50% of the damage up to a maximum of the value of the going ox. What happens, for example, a 100 rand ox goes a 500 rand ox in terms of chatzin nezek, the nizak has to be paid 250 rand. The maximum he can take is the living ox, which is worth 100 rand. Because the Torah does not inquire of the tam, or the baal hatam, the baal hashur, which has, that does not obligate the baal hashur, if he is a tam, to pay over and above that level. So that's the din of the shur who gores another shur. My property gores your property, causes a loss. Two limitations: a maximum of half of your loss, and a maximum of the value of the ox of my ox which caused the damage. What about if the ox was if it has been known that this is a nagchum from yesterday and the day before, and the owner has not looked after it, shalim yishalim shor tachas hashor, then he's got to pay ox for ox, and he can keep the dead one. Says Rashi, here too, we need three negichas to make it a situation where he knows this is a nagchum. Shalim yishalim shor, then he's got to pay for the ox. How much does that mean? Nezek shalim, he pays for the complete loss. The mace can state the ownership of the nizak, says Rashi. The olo yashlim hamazik ad shishtalim nizak kulin nizkui. So if the ox was 1,000 to start with, how much is the nizak entitled to? 1,000 in total. If the carcass is worth 100, he keeps the carcass, and the owner has to pay in the additional 900, the mazik. So now we've got a shur killing a man, which we're not going to be dealing with in our perek directly. We've got a man causing damage to somebody else's property by means of a bow. We've got a man causing damage to somebody else's property by means of a shur. Now we skip a little bit, and we go to Pasuk Hey of the next, to Pasuk Dalet of the next perek. This word bi'er comes several times. It says Rashi often just to translate those words and posit that ki yaver is the iroi bi'er kulam loshen behemer. It all means animals, all means cattle. Ki yaver ish sode echerim, if a man consumes by means of his cattle the field or vineyard of his friend, v'shilach es bi'iroi, or he sends his cattle in, and it consumes the field of another, then the mazik has to compensate the nizak with the best of his own field or vineyard, says Rashi. He leads his animals into the fields or vineyards of his friends, and the animals cause damage in that field or vineyard in one of the following two ways: either through the very sending of him, of animals in that alone causes the damage, or bir. As have explained, what does v'shilach mean? That by the mere sending of him in the vineyard or the field is damaged. That means by the animal walking over and trampling. And beer is the damage of the shein, of the tooth, which is not the damage of biting that we've already learned belongs to caring. This is the damage of shein, eating. The animal eats up the field or the vineyard. These are the two types of nezikin which are discussed here in this possible. So now we've got back to shor. A shor can now damage in one of three ways. A shor can damage by striking, using his horns or using his teeth or using his body. A shor can damage by walking over things, by trampling, and a shor can damage by consuming. That's the kerin, the shein, and the regal. One more we have to do, which is in Pasuk Hey. Ki seitze esh u'motzo kutzim menechol godish o'yakom o'yasod. This is a strange nezik. This is now again my property in a more abstract sense. Again, it's Aish, it's fire. What happens? The fire starts. My property, I like the fire. Then it gets blown out and it consumes the field of my friend. Shalim Yishalim Hamavir Sabeira, he who lit the fire must pay. Says Rashi on Pasuk Hey, Kitay Tse Aish Afilu Mi'atzma. Even if this fire goes off on its own, it's not Ki Yavir Aish, the person lights the fire. It's Ki Tse Aish, the fire goes. If you look a little bit further down in the Rashi, Shalom Yishalim Hamavir Afal Fi Sheidlik B'Toy Shaloi. Even if a person lit the fire in his own property, the Iyotso Mi'atzma, Ali they could Zimshim its Motzo. And the fire goes on by itself by finding thorns and weeds and things that it crosses the boundaries, and off it goes and causes damage somewhere else. What is he being held responsible for? Not for lighting the fire. A man is entitled to light a fire in his own property. But once he lights a fire, he's going to realize that he has a potential mazik in his property, and it has to be watched just as the shomuad has to be watched. So his fire should have been watched in a way that it didn't go outside of his property, and he is being held responsible for not having watched his fire. That's where he's held responsible. That's a little bit of the background of the areas of Nezikin that we're going to deal with. So let's summarize them. We have damages caused by an ox, damage caused by a pit, damage caused by fire. Shor, boyer, and esh. The shor is subdivided into the damage he causes by striking, kerim, by walking regal, or by consuming shame. And in these few psukim, we have all the possible cases of any damage that my property can cause somebody else's property, whether it's a motor car, or whether it's a snake, or whether it's anything else. Anything that is my property, which damages somebody else's property, is going to have to be fitted into one of these categories that we've discussed so far. And each one has its own characteristics. And that's the subject of the first parak of Avodah Zarah. Says the Mishnah, Arba'o Ovois Zikin. Have you thought of a good translation of an Av? Sorry? Major category. It'd be simpler than that. But I thought that would be that's going to be the starting point. There are four fathers of Nezikin. What does it mean, a father? A generator. There are four generators of Nezikin. Hashoy, the Hapoy. Hashoy, we learned in the Chumash, we saw that. Boy, we saw. Mave, we have a little bit of difficulty with. What exactly Mave means. Because if you've learnt a little bit ahead, you'll find already that there's a Machloikis Rav and Shmuel as to what Mave means. Find that Machloikis. On that Gimel of the base, about 2/3 of the way down the page, or 3/4 of the way down the page, just over two dots. My Mave, the Gemara asks, what is Mave? What does it mean? Rav Omar, Mave ze Odom. Rav says Mave is Odom, a person who directly causes damage. Ushmuel Omar Mave ze Hashem, and Shmuel says that Mave is shame. The Gemara goes on to discuss why that word is used and what the basis of their machlokes is, which we'll do when we get there. But right now we just need to know that there are two perushim as to what the word Mave means. It either means man or it means shame. If it means man, well, let's go to the next one, to the last one, Vahaveh, and fire. If Mabe means man, then we've covered all the areas of Nezikin. Shor, which means Keren, Shein, Rega. Boil, Heve, we've got, which is Esh, and Mabe, which is human being, man himself. So that the entire gamut of the Nezikin is covered. But according to Shmuel, that Mabe means Shein, then what does Shor mean? If we're going to say Shor means Shein and Keren, it means Keren and Regel, then why only Keren and Regel and not Shein as well? So what are we going to leave out? We're going to say that we're going to say that Mave is Shein and Shor is only Regel, because the one that doesn't fit in, the odd man out in all of these, quite easily say the Mishnah is not dealing with that at the moment, because the Mishnah is dealing with those Nezikin which have similar halachas, where you cause damage and you have to pay for the damage you caused. What are those? You can't put Kerin in, because in Kerin there is a case where you cause the damage and you don't have to pay for the damage you caused. So we're leaving Kerin out according to Shmuel. And we'll have to say Shor means Regel, which is the normal way an ox damages. You let the ox go loose, what is the first thing that he does is he damages by walking. That's the first thing he does. That's what Shor means. The normal damage of an ox. Boil, which is the pit. Mave is then Shein, the second damage of the ox. Behever is Esh. What have we left up? We left up man. Okay, then we're dealing, then the subject of the Mishnah is man's, the damage of man's property. That is the machlokes between Rav and Shmuel. What is the subject of the Mishnah? Are we dealing with the damages of man, all the damages that man can possibly cause? Or are we dealing with a limited area of damages, that is, damages caused by man's property for which he is fully responsible? That's how Shmuel would define the subject of the Mishnah. Damage is caused by man's property for which he is responsible in full. There's already a major difficulty in the Mishnah, of course. What is that? What is the major difficulty? Yeah, the Seder, what's Shein and Regel we saw was in one posuk. Shein and Regel was in one posuk. So according to Shmuel, he says that Shor is Shein, is Regel, and Mave is Shein, and Bor in the middle. What's the purpose of that? And according to Rav, he says that Mave is Odom. So Shor comes first, which is all of the Shor. Good, okay, that one can now suppose do. Then Bor comes, even though Shein and Regel comes after Bor, but it's included in Shor. Then Mave is a little bit difficult, because Hever comes directly after Bor. So what is Mave? What is Odom doing in that particular place? Hever comes after Shein and Regel. It's all together wrong. So that's what the Shein will deal with. Loi Arei Ashur, but now the Mishnah goes on to another discussion. Loi Arei Ashur Ka Arei Mave, Loi Arei Mave Ka Arei Ashur. The Mishnah is concerned with something else, and that is, why does the Torah have to mention them all? Let the Torah give us a general principle that if your property damages somebody else's property, you are responsible. And let it give one example. Why do we need all these different examples of damage? Says the Mishnah, because Loi Harei Ashur Kaharei Hamave. The concept, the damage, the nature of the damage of the Shur is unlike the nature of the damage of Mave. Loi Harei Hamave Kaharei Ashur. And the damage of Mave is unlike the damage of Shur. Why does he have to say both ways around? If it's unlike, it's unlike. What is the Mishnah trying to avoid? Kalachot. So you cannot learn Mave from Shur, and you cannot learn Shur from Mave. Either way. Nor can you learn the two of them together, because both of them are alive. We're going to be talking about Shur and Mave, then whether we're holding like Rav or we're holding like Shmuel, Shur and Mave have in common that they both have Ruach Haim, they both are alive. Karei HaYishin Ruach Haim. You can't learn fire. I would have thought that for fire maybe you'd put it. You're obligated to look after things that are alive and that can move and go places, but fire, which normally can be kept under control more readily, maybe I'm not Chayav. If the wind then comes and blows it out, that's an act of God. That's not me who did it. Maybe, and I wouldn't be able to learn Esh. And then if I had those, let's say, good, so I'll have those three. Shur, Mave, Hever. What do I need Bor for? Those two are not sufficient, because they are Darkan Lele Kulahazik. It's normal that they do move and that they do cause damage. Kahare Abor, Shin Darkan Lele Kulahazik. A Bor doesn't go anywhere. People fall into it, it doesn't go anywhere. And I might have thought that's a reason not to be chayav for it. I'd have to still analyze why that would be a reason. Hatzada shoveh shebohen, at the end of the day, we've got to look at the common denominator among all of them. Shedarkon lahazik shmiroson olecha. Number one, it is normal for all of these to cause damage. It's nothing unusual. If you've got a show, if it's not looked after, it can cause damage. A boy, mave, heve, all these things can cause damage. And therefore, the potential for damage should have been seen and should have been foreseen by the owner. And consequently, you are responsible to be shomer. That's where your problem is, that you didn't guard them properly. You didn't look after something in your possession which has a potential for damaging others. And the halacha is also common. What is the halacha? That when damage is caused, the mazik becomes obligated to compensate the value of the damage, the meitav ha'oritz, and if he's going to use land to pay for that, he's got to use the best of his land. That will analyze it a little further in the Rashi. Why does Seder Nezikin start before the Kalim? Did you see one? What the Rambam says. The very first obligation of a system of law is to make sure that people don't get damaged. So the right to security is the first right. And the first obligation on the legal system is to stop people damaging one another, and the obligation on the dayonim is to impose penalties for people that do damage one another. It's the first thing that has to be put right before anything else. This is where the seder starts. Damage has to be avoided. And provision has to be made to compensate anybody who is damaged. That's then the Rashi. Arba ovis nizikin, ovis kari lahanach diksivan bekro behedi. The Mishnah calls ovis those which are written posuk clearly. What is Rashi saying?
That there might be, but there are.
Rashi says, because it's Lahana, those which are written are called obvious. Which means immediately there are others which aren't written, which are not obvious. Secondly, how is Rashi learning obvious? What does it mean generator? In what way are they generated? Yes, they're generated, but the concept is generated from those concepts which are given in the Torah. From there we've got to generate all the other types of nezikin. That's why they're called Ovis. The Gemara Beforish, Eini Yu Toldus. The Gemara will discuss which are the Toldus. If these are the Ovis, then everything else is a Toldum. A Toldum means a generated one, the one which has been generated from the Posuk. Which one is generated from the Posuk? Then the Gemara will. Why does Rashi even say that? The Gemara is going to ask that. Why does Rashi tell us the Gemara is going to ask that? Rashi doesn't summarize the whole Sugya. Why does he tell us the Gemara is going to ask that? Because Rashi is teaching us that it's a valid question to ask in the Pshat of the Mishnah already. By saying Arba Ovois Nezikin, the Torah, the Mishnah is leading us into asking, that means that there are Toldos, what are the Toldos? Already over here we're being told that there are Toldos, and we need that the right thing to do right here is to say, good, these are the Ovois, and what are the Toldos? That in learning the Mishnah, that's a question to ask. Says Rashi, yes, it is a question to ask, and the Gemara will deal with it. The Gemara asks that question, and it lays the foundation for the first kashu of the Gemara. Ashur v'habu, kiseder she'im ksuvin b'parsho, sidran b'mishnah. Rashi says straightforward, the Mishnah has laid them out in the same order that they're in the parsha. The parsha rishon ha'nehem rab ashur, shniyah b'voy. The first parsha refers to ashur, and the second one to avoy. That's all very easy. Rashi's given us the easy ones. The problem is what happens after that. Someone to learn that this is all part of the same Rashi. And Mave, you lost. Where's Mave in the Seder? Where's the Seder of Mave? Farish Bigmor. The Gemara will explain what Mave is and where it fits in and why it's there. And Hever, Kiteitzeyosh, that's the Pasuk of Kiteitzeyosh. You like that? You like, and the Raya, this is the Pleyeshua, means the Raya that the Pleyeshua gives is what? Because Rashi should say,
v'hamaveh v'ha'ever, if he's quoting from the Mishnah. So you can see that the Dibur HaMaskil isn't the Dibur HaMaskil at all. It's all the continuation of the same Rashi. That's nice, isn't it? But it's not necessary to learn like that. The Parsha Rishon and Emra B'Shosh near the Vod, Mavi Meforish B'Gemara, the Gemara would explain what Mavi is. Rashi can't go further. You're going to ask me, what about the Seder of Mavi? You've got to know what Mavi means. What Mavi means is, the Gemara will have to determine further on, and then we'll have to work out exactly how it fits in, but we'll do it now also. Hever, says Rashi, what should Rashi say on Hever? Esh. Says Rashi, ki teitzei esh. So that's by the Pnei Yeshua, that's resolved, of course, ki teitzei esh, because Rashi is telling us where in the Pasuk it comes. He's quoting the Pasuk. But if we won't learn that way, how would you know Mshat in Hever? What's Rashi saying, ki teitzei esh? No. It's what's bothering Rashi. What makes Rashi comment? He's not translating the word Hever. If he was translating the word Hever, he would have said Esh. So that means Rashi has a kasha. What's Rashi's kasha?
Something else that's probably
got it, and if you do it yourself, you won't be hired. If you go and take a torch, like the Olympic Games, and you go running across to your neighbor's field and you light it, you won't be hired. That'll be odd, that won't be Esh. Okay, so now we're getting closer. But what's bothering Rashi in the mission? It's a grammatical question. Mave, and then what should the next one be? Mavaya. Or Mavir, one who causes damage by fire. Hever is a passive form, damage which is caused by fire, says Rashi, because that's the belief in the Pasuk. Ki teitzeyosh. If you said Rashi pointed out in the Chumash as well, that the wording of the Torah is not in the active form, it's in the passive form already. If fire should go out from your property, that's why the Mishnah also uses Loshon Hever and not Loshon Mavir. That's what Rashi is explaining. No, Paul, first you're going to learn a lot of publicity. Loi are shoy ka are amade, kloi mad. That means to say, so Rashi is already having a difficulty here. What's Rashi saying? Explain to us what the mission is doing here. I kosov rachmono shoy loi napik mave mine. Had the Torah written only Shor, we would not have worked out from there Mavi. Let's stop there for a moment. What's Rashi's big clue? When we translated the Mishnah, we said the same. That means to say, says Rashi, the Mishnah says quite clearly, Lo Arei Shor, Kerei Mavi, Lo Arei Mavi, Kerei Shor. And that's why you need them both. That's simply the simple way of translating the Mishnah. Says Rashi, Kloima, what's the big Chiddush that comes? Ikosev Rachmon HaShor, Lo Nopik Mavi Minei. That's what the Mishnah is trying to do. Of course, that's what the Mishnah said. Now, there are two ways of learning at this point in the Mishnah. Look at it inside in the Mishnah. Lo yare ha-shoyer ka-hare ha-mavi. I could learn it that the damage caused by the shoyer is not as severe as the damage caused by the mavi legally. And therefore I might think that Mave is higher but not Shor. Or I could learn it, Lo are Ashor ka are Mave, that the damage caused by the Shor is so severe and unlike the damage caused by the Mave that I would not have been able to learn Mave from Shor. In other words, which is which? Obviously, is the Mishnah saying in this first phrase, it's true, Lamaisa comes out the same because the Mishnah works in both ways, but you'll see soon why it's very important to know. The Mishnah is saying you can't learn in the first one when it says Lo Yare Hashor Kare Amave. How do you translate that? That you would not be able to learn Shor if Mave alone was written, or that you would not be able to learn Mave if Shor alone was written? What does the Mishnah say? Do you follow? It could be both ways. There's no hechra. Says Rashi, there is a hechra. This means, when it says Lo Yarei Ashur Karei Amavet means one thing and one thing only, and that is Ikotzov Rachmon Ashur Lenafik Mavim. If the Torah would have written Shur, you wouldn't be able to learn Mavim. It's true the Mishnah goes on to say, and if the Torah would have learned Mavi, you wouldn't be able to learn Shor either. But you've got to do it that way around. That's how you're going to translate these two phrases. The first one is that if Shor would have been written, you couldn't learn Mavi. And the second one is that if Mavi wouldn't have been written, you couldn't have learned it from Shor. And it's necessary to learn it that way around for reasons of which we'll see in Tosfos. But if we don't understand this Rashi, we won't know what the Tosfos is all about. And that's why the Torah has to write it down. When the Mishnah starts its analysis, why doesn't it tackle each of these mezikin in order of their seder? Since the seder to the way they're listed, why not keep to the seder? Rashi's already said, we don't understand it in full yet, but Rashi said there's a Seder to the listing. What is the Seder? The way they're written in the Parsha. Now let's analyze them. Let's take them one by one. You can't learn Bo from Sho, and you can't learn Sho from Bo. That's how it should be. Why does it skip Bo and go into Mavi? It's asked to Rashi. Rashi gives two answers. Firstly, Mishum the two lo yavi matzi lemitni lo yzeh vzeh sheyesh bo in ruach chayim. The Mishnah wants to class them together and say what would then be if Shur and Mavi were taken together. In other words, there is a common denominator between Shur and Mavi which the Mishnah wants to use in its analysis. Shur and Mavi are both living things, and it wants to say, and therefore you can't take Shur and Mavi alone and extract from that Esh or Bor, because Shur and Mavi are similar in that they both have Ruach HaChayim and Bor and Esh don't. And in order to proceed with that line of reasoning, the Mishnah selects the two that have Ruach Chaim and shows the development of the analysis from that. The Habore. Mishnah teaches us a Chiddush. That even though both of them have a Ruach Chaim, both Shor and Mave, you can't learn one from the other either. In other words, to say that you can't learn Shor from Boer and Boer from Shor, that's easy. But they're totally different. But that you can't even learn Shor from Mave and Mave from Shor, particularly according to Shmuel, the holder of Shane and Regal, the two nezikim, that you can't learn that from one another, that's already a chiddush, a bigger chiddush. And that's why the Mishnah starts taking Shur and Maveh as the ones I might have thought, one of which is most easily dispensable. If we're going to dispense with anything in the Mishnah, surely the easiest would be either Shur or Maveh. So the Mishnah starts with saying, no, you can't learn Shur from Maveh, and you can't learn Maveh from Shur. They're different.
Ulahi seems to first say that it's following from what you just seen. Ulahi, therefore, it's just a v'chein.
Which Ulahi is
it? Ulahi, not that creation to Harei Mavi. Ulahi seems to imply that it's all the Roshu.
Yeah.
Is this about to be saying the reason why we put the Loharei to put to, as we explained, Ulahi, not that creation to Harei Mavi?
Right.
Ulahi sounds like, for this reason, therefore, yeah, but.
Firstly, it's not necessary. Well, the haki can be going on, for the following reason. Not that. You don't have to learn that laki goes on what went before.
It sounds simple to say the chayim or the not that, the ratio of the harem. The haki sounds almost like a separate account from what came before.
So how do you want to learn it then? You want to say that what have we established before?
Let's
see
how
it is. If you're right that the haki connects it with the first phrase. Let's try and see, is there some rationale in that? Then there would be no meaning to the Mishum further on, would there? Then should you say, Ola haki not kubereshu karei amav, we're not supposed to say the lo yarei asho karei habo. Mishum, the two lo yarei matzi lemitni lo yzeh vzeh, sheish ben ruach hayim.
That what worries me more in the Rashi is that v'oid time achrino, which is a long way of saying v'oid time achrino. The whole of Vusa Ashmin, Shafa Gav Shish Lishneim Ruachayim, Lenafik Had Michavre. The Gemara Mefarish Mailoi Harei the Gomer. The Gemara will explain exactly what the Mishnah means by this analysis of Loi Harei. Harei Ha'esh She'im Be Ruachayim, the Iloi Katsri Rachmon, the Hava Amin Eli Potter. What is Rashi saying here? Loi Harei Ha'esh. And the two of them are not kahare aish, shem beruachayim. The iloi kasvi ratmona have amina lipoter, and the Torah didn't write which. If the Torah didn't write esh, I would have thought that you should be potter for esh. So the absence of ruachayim is a reason to think that it might be potter. That's also very important. Why is that important to know? Leonard, what are you asking? Yes, if it wasn't, that's what the Mishnah is saying. And therefore, if Esh wasn't mentioned specifically, we couldn't deduce it from Shoir and Mave. We couldn't deduce Hever from the two of them. Why not? Because it doesn't have Ruach Chaim. So is Ruach Chaim a Kal or a Chumah? The absence of Ruach Chaim is a Kal. Absence of Ruach Chaim is a cup. And why is that so important to know? Because now you can see what the first phrase means when it says, "Beloy zeh v'zeh sheyesh bo in ruach chayim keharei ha'esh she'in bo ruach chayim." So which is the kal and which is the chumah? The one that becomes after the loy harei or the keharei? So it comes out that the first one is the chumah. I might have thought that from the first one I can learn the second one. No, I can't. Therefore, that's where Rashi knows from in the beginning when it says Lo Harei Ashor Kare Amave. That means that when the Shor, that I couldn't have learned from the Shor that the case of Mave would also be covered. That Shor is the Chomer and that Mave is the Kal. Again, you ask what the Ma'inat Gemina? Why do we need to know this? We'll see that in Tosfos. That's all we don't know in Tosfos. Loizeh isn't referring to two, but to all three. All three of them have something in common. They all go, move, they all, and that they do their damage on the move. Where they are, they're okay. If they would stay where they are, they wouldn't be a problem. Their damage is when they move. That's what's common to them.
That's a shame.
No, if he's in your property, it's no problems. Only when he goes up to somebody else's property and causes the damage. Whereas the bow, where you put him, that's where he makes the damage. Hatzad Ashovim, Mefarish B'Gmorah Li'itui Yamai. The Gemara will explain what additional things are being included by the Tzad Ashovim. When the Mishnah gives us a Tzad Ashovim, the common denominator, the purpose of that is to extend further and to say not only these, but anything else which has this Tzad Ashovim will be included. The Meitav Oritz Me'idis Nechosov Yigbe Demei Hezekah. If he claims from property, in other words, if the owner doesn't have money, if the mazik doesn't have money, then the nizak has a bond on the property, he can claim property. What property can he claim? It is the best. Now that doesn't make any difference in terms of the value. You can have two pieces of karka that are worth the same amount of money, but one is called idis and one is not called idis. For example, you can have a farm of 100,000 acres on the northern border of Southwest Africa, which is worth 100,000 rand, and you can have a small house in Orange Grove, which is also worth 100,000 rand. So the value is the same. Your show comes and damages my property worth 100,000 rand. You owe me 100,000 rand. You haven't got it. So I say, good. Would you sell one of your properties? You say, wonderful. I've been waiting for a chance to sell that farm in Southwest Africa. I say, the house in Orange Grove, please. He says, what difference does it make to you? Both 100,000 rand, what's the answer? What's the difference between them? Saleability, it's easier to sell. And he is entitled to claim, so you see that the saleability does not affect the value in a sense. What it affects is the size, is how much you're getting for it. But you can have two things which have the same price, and yet there's a preference. If it's a question of choosing the two, you'll choose the one over the other. That's Imroy Tzilikwa'alui Karko. That's if he wants to give him Karko. But what if he wants to give him the Taltli? He says, look, forget the property. I've got a diamond I'm here to give you. And he says, okay, diamonds. You've got a very small gem, flawless. And you've got a big diamond, yellow, and full of flaws. They're worth the same. Please give me the gem, flawless. He can say no. That not. Because this aspect of Giddis is a problem only with Karko. Saleability is a problem with only with Karko. But Taltalin doesn't have that problem. Why not? It's true that the gem flawless is more saleable than the big one. But you can always find a buyer for anything if it's portable. You take it from place to place, there's nobody here. You go to Cape Town, there's nobody in Cape Town. You go to Durban, there's nobody in South Africa. You go to, you find somebody who will buy it. The problem is with Karko. Who wants a property in the northern, on the northern border of South Africa?
The value can be the same.
The value can be the same. It comes a point, you're right, the value has dropped to 100,000 rand. It should be R1 million. It's dropped to 100,000 rand.
That means you can get a buyer for 100,000.
Eventually. Eventually, but with great tirchah. You put a weight, you put a fine, eventually you'll find somebody who prepares to pay. That is the value. It's accepted.
Accepted value is that you can readily sell the thing for a price.
Not readily. The accepted value is that if you find a buyer, a fair price in the market would be there. But it doesn't mean you've got a buyer. When Beis Din decide the value, they don't actually put it on the market. They've got a value in terms of today's market property. There was a farm next door there that was the same size that went for 100,000 rand. That will determine immediately that the value of this farm is 100,000 rand. He hasn't got a buyer. But right now, today, that is the value of a farm in that area. It's not the saleability doesn't affect the value to that extent and that quickly. Because the Rashi is teaching us over here that the reason for the requirement of Idis is that he is entitled to have something quickly saleable. It's not fair to expect him to take a long time to turn the asset into cash. He was damaged and he needs another cow. What's the good of the farm in Southwest Africa? You need something. He needs another cow. And if you can't sell it immediately and get the cow, that's no good. The diamond you can sell immediately. You might have to travel a little bit or send it to another town to sell it. But there's not a time element involved. You can get the cash right away. That's not a problem. The two specimens that I'm going to work on the Mishnah are the first three. The first Tosfos we won't spend much time on. It's important to know it. The second Tosfos we'll do, and the third Tosfos we'll do thoroughly. And then I think we need to get moving into the Masechta a little bit. We might have to come back and relearn once we're in a little bit, but I don't want to go too slowly at the outset because we're going to find ourselves sitting on things which become clearer later on. So I want to move down in the next year, in Yitzhak Hashem, if possible, at least on Gemara Rashi, to the bottom of the next Omer. Notice it with our Heoros or whatever we need to do, and probably go to the two dots before we actually do the Gemara a second time, with more detail on the Tosfos. For example, the next Tosfos, V'lo Yizev Ezeh Shesh Ben Ruach Chaim, it's pointless doing it this moment. Because to do it without the Gemaras on Daf Gimel, on Daf Hei, the Tosfos doesn't mean anything. So there's certain Tosfos that we're not going to do until we're much further into the Masechta, in any event. Where we could go ahead. Okay.